Welcome, warriors, to the Klingon... Start again.
I take it you're recording then.
Yes. Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your host, Jorn Sutai Vampyr, and Jajim Vestai Jajim will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Greetings and welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jajim.
And I am Jorn. And we're kind of hoping that you'll stay awake for this book.
And the book that we're going to be talking about is titled The Wounded Sky. And the author is Diane Duane. And it was published in 1983. So... John, why don't you launch right into our brief summary of this very exciting plot?
Yeah. A pretty alien scientist. Well, Jim Kirk's on the bridge, aren't they all? Invents an intergalactic inversion drive, an engine system that transcends warp drive, and the Enterprise will be the first one to test it. The Klingons attempt to thwart the test. But a greater danger looms when strange symptoms surface among the crew and time becomes meaningless. Like most of the info dump. Now Captain Kirk and his friends face their greatest challenge to repair the fabric of the universe before time is lost forever, ever, 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 ever.
So, yeah, a pretty alien scientist that, to me, sounded like was a spider.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim Kirk on the bridge, she's got to be pretty.
I guess.
Although, you know, he doesn't try to seduce her this time.
No, I tell you what, he played it pretty straight this whole thing. Let's get into our overall impressions, and I'll let you go ahead and go first.
Okay, this was a book that was... written back when they were starting to do Star Trek books. And it's written pretty much like all the other books of the time, like the TV episodes, where you had to have the major characters from the TV show exactly the same at the end of the book as they were when the book began. There can be no character development amongst them.
Mm-hmm.
You can throw some other characters in and do something with them, but, you know, who are we rooting for? Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, usually.
Yeah.
And with this book, you know, the big thing to me, and it's ignored completely, is the Prime Directive coming into play with this story? Towards the end of the story, they literally create a sentient life form in another universe.
Mm-hmm.
So why do they think they can manipulate the alien to, you know, make it fit better within its universe? I mean, why is that not even discussed?
Yeah, I don't.
Come on, it's a Prime Directive. My biggest concern with this book is it's 90% info dump. Is there a way the author could have given us the information about the drive, about the universes, about what's going on, without just loading us down and having one character keep explaining everything over and just dumping the information on us? It's an info dump.
Yeah.
And we're picking books. We're picking books for Klingons, okay? And here the Klingons are wasted.
Yes.
I gotta say, how do 8 Klingon ships not do anything to a single Federation ship? I mean... even in World War II, if you had 8 ships, destroyer class, you know, around a battleship, I'm sorry, that battleship is going to be toast. You may lose a few of the destroyers, but that battleship is going to have it. I mean, oh. And what does the author do to get them out of the situation? Well, they're blown up by a supernova. Convenient, they keep having supernovas happening.
Yeah.
I know they're causing them, but...
I know.
What did you think of the book, Jim?
What? Not much. this was a difficult book to read. I just couldn't get into it. It didn't hold my attention very well. It seemed like the author was going for more of an artsy approach. A lot of flowery kind of descriptions of everything. You know, it didn't feel like Star Trek. For me, it just felt too full of fluff and not enough substance.
My biggest problem with the book was making sure I got the bookmark back in place before I fell asleep after the 10th page.
Yeah. The only part of the book that involved Klingons was completely unbelievable. I mean, the Enterprise goes up against, as you said, 8 Klingon ships and survives by creating a supernova. Well, first of all, you've got 8 Klingon ships against 1 Federation
right.
ship. And
yeah.
Sulu apparently has a supernatural ability to avoid having anything happen to the Enterprise. All right, now, I know Sulu's been written as a brilliant pilot, but 8 Klingon ships?
The problem with the cruiser-class ship, like the Enterprise... It can't, I don't care how good Sulu is, it can't turn as fast as some of the smaller Klingon ships
that were
in that battle.
And, well, the other thing is I seem to remember the Enterprise being pinned by 3 Romulan ships at one point.
Well, yeah, but the Enterprise wanted to be pinned.
And 2 Tholian ships at another point in time.
Because they couldn't leave the area because they had to rescue Kirk.
Right. So, 8 Klingon ships?
Yeah.
Sorry, it's unbelievable. And then creating a supernova. Now, to my understanding, a nova happens to a star when it uses up all of its hydrogen fuel and the core of the star begins to create other elements such as iron and nickel and things like that, and then it just the mass inside is squeezed so tight that it just eventually just blows up. Okay.
Well, I think it's a little bit more than that. My understanding is that when it loses the ability to burn its hydrogen, it starts to cool a little bit, and when it does that, it collapses a little bit on itself. Then the increased gravity at that point takes over, and the helium starts getting fused into heavier and heavier elements, reigniting the temperature that causes the suns to expand, but does so, you know, in a kind of a burst, not real big. Novas are not big, but supernovas, if you've got enough extreme particles fusing and enough temperature change, you're going to blow yourself almost apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't see the Enterprise having that ability to to do something like that.
Well, they said it was the inversion drive that...
Oh.
Triggering the inversion drive triggered it.
I guess.
I mean, the best they could do later on in Next Gen was when they had the Civil War in Klingon Empire, Kern triggered a solar flare.
Yeah.
By flying close to the sun and kicking in warp drive, which caused a flare to be emitted, not blowing the whole sun up.
Right. And that is plausible, at least. But creating a supernova, I don't think it can be done, at least not with the physics that we understand them now. Okay,
so don't worry. Later, as you get later into the novel, the science gets even worse.
Oh, I know. I think the author needed to do a little more research into astrophysics. You know, and the sad thing of it is I am used to way better from this author than what we
She's the one that did the Romulan series that we reviewed a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was excellent. So, you know, you got to wonder, were there restrictions on her? Did she have to fill a certain number of pages?
Or be limited to a certain number of pages? Because I think a lot of the info dump problem could have been solved by expanding the book out to allow them to show all of these little thingamabobbies that they needed to tell us instead.
Yeah. And we're actually talking about a book that is almost 50 years old. So, I don't know. I get, you know, by today's standards, I would say not a great book, but maybe, who knows, because it's gotten a lot of good reviews on like Goodreads. As a matter of fact, there's one person that reviewed it on Goodreads and said they read it at least all the time because they just can't get enough of it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So you need to send me that person's name so I can start, you know, feeding them my books, is what you're saying, Jim? So they have something else to read.
Hey, now, come on. I reviewed one of your books. I thought it was very, very good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I know, but I got to sit here and plug my books somehow.
Read it in two sittings. Okay, well, you don't have to do that. John writes books, and they're good. Buy them and read them. So,
getting back to this book, though, apparently this inversion drive was not a top secret concept, which apparently is how the Klingons found out about it, because apparently there was a competition, and Kirk was so yay when he found out that they won the competition. And of course, by now he should realize that everything that new that happens in Starfleet is going to go through the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, it's just that's just the way it is, guys. You know.
So yeah,
they go in, they get it installed, they come out, they get ambushed, they escape, they run away, they activate the drive, they're thrown into a dream state.
Mm-hmm.
They experience weird ash shit from their past.
Yeah.
And each time they activate the inversion drive, they do it for a little bit longer, and the dream state goes a little bit longer. And, well, you know, it makes you wonder, what's protecting the Enterprise from all the stuff in space? Because apparently the entire crew is knocked out, incapacitated. They lose all the time that the inversion drive is activated.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, and then there was the one scene where there was the mass, the entire crew was having these dreams, and they were all in it together, but everybody had a different problem. And, you know, I don't know. It didn't, I don't know. Can you
explain? At least until Kirk went around and went up to each of them and brought them into his dream reality.
Yeah. So can you even explain to me how this inversion drive worked? It was, my understanding was, it was supposed to be able to allow a starship to travel from one galaxy to another just as quickly as it would be for warp drive to travel between stars.
Well, I have a handle on the warp drive, because the warp drive is creating a bubble of some sort of space around the ship that allows the ship to move faster than the speed of light. The only thing I can say about the inversion drive is it's magic.
That's what it seems to be.
They don't explain it at all. And that's what's getting me on to the conclusion of the book, because somehow, they don't explain this, they've destabilized their universe and punched a hole between it and another universe.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do that? I'm not going to tell you. It's magic.
Yes.
Okay. Then they go and they fix it. Well, you didn't tell us how you did it. But how did you fix it? I'm not going to tell you. It's magic.
Mm-hmm. So it yeah. But there was a lot of time in this book spent on these dream sequences. There was a lot of time spent on descriptions of space and what it's like to be in space. And there wasn't, as I say, there wasn't a lot of substance. There was a lot of fluff, but there wasn't a lot of substance.
Hey, why is Harb Tanzer in this book?
I don't know.
He serves no purpose.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about, this guy who's in charge of R&R in the ship.
Yeah, he was the wreck officer. And
why is he there?
Yeah. And did you recall that he was able to change the environment? Is that a reference to maybe a holodeck kind of thing for the recreation room?
Something along that lines. He was able to do something, but...
Well, yeah, at one point there
I know it's not canon, Jim, but if you go and you watch Star Trek Continues, the very first episode...
Yes, I remember that.
In a holodeck.
Yes, it is, and but they explain it. It's experimental at this point.
Scotty's working on it.
Yeah.
And Jim is just so blown away by the fact that... Yeah, I know, pun intended. Blown away by the fact that the gun pointing at him looks so damn real.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he was doing a cowboy kind of program in there. So, yeah, apparently there was an experimental use of the... But that would have been later. I don't know. I'm telling you, I don't know. But Harb Tanzer seemed to have the ability to change the recreation room to fit, and this was instantaneously, to fit whatever the need was for it. So if the recreation was going to be leisure, he could have a little tree. He could have a tree there and grass and everything else. And it sounded to me like we were talking about a holodeck long before the holodeck came along.
And it gets back to my original point. What's the point?
Yeah.
Why is he there? Why is he doing this stuff? I mean, he's not even part of the resolution of the problem. He's not offering any ideas or anything.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe it was a dropped subplot. But definitely a big plot hole there.
I mean, I think another thing we should do is figure out what other books he has shown up in. And are they all Diane's, or is this a character they're sharing between the Star Trek authors?
Yeah, you know, and
he's not in TV series.
I was trying to figure out, because the name was very familiar. I've read Tanzer somewhere
before.
He's been
in other books.
Okay, so I don't know. Maybe we need to look that up and see what we can find out about him. But
and in other books, he's doing stuff like, you know, entertaining the aliens that are on the ship, letting them experience what human culture is like, and
okay,
you know, providing recreation for the crew that they needed for some reason. But here, I don't know what the point is. And
okay,
another thing that really
I found him. He's in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He's in 11 books, okay? And it doesn't say who the authors are, but he's also appears in the TOS video game, which I'm not sure, it's the Kobayashi Alternative. And he also appears in 2 comic books.
Okay.
So that's kind of why we see him, or why we remember him. But this is the first...
Here's another thing.
This is the first one he appears in.
Oh, okay. Here's another thing that... well, that explains why he's not being used much. The aliens don't use vowels, okay?
Yeah.
There's no vowels in their names. There's no vowels in the names they call people. then why are there vowels in every other word they pronounce?
Yeah, I know that.
I mean, we'd have major trouble reading what they're saying, but how about some consistency?
Yeah, I seem to remember it mentioned somewhere in the text that the vowels would just take care of themselves.
Okay.
So I remember reading that somewhere. So now let's talk about this dimensional connection between the two universes and this entity or life form or whatever it is that got created.
Yeah, I'm really unsure about that thing totally.
Yeah.
It didn't make a whole lot of sense. Apparently, initially, it had no consciousness because, well, apparently it had no entropy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's a different universe, I guess, because entropy is fundamental to the three laws of thermodynamics. So you got to have entropy. But at least she's gone with the point of, if you don't have entropy, you cannot experience time.
Mm.
If nothing changes, entropy causes change because entropy causes systems to go from a high level of energy to a low level of energy. One of the theories of the destruction of our universe is the heat death of the universe. Everywhere in the universe will have the same low level of entropy. There will be no higher states and lower states so that you can have a change between those energy levels that can cause things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's a subject she probably could have explored more.
Yeah. Now it says, I looked up entropy because I'm personally, I don't completely understand the concept, but it says a thermodynamic quantity representing the unavailability of a system's thermal energy for a conversion into mechanical work. So it just seems like you don't have enough heat to make something do what you want it to do. It's often interpreted as the degree of disorder or randomness in the system. And it says, the second law of thermodynamics says that entropy always increases with time.
Actually, the three laws of thermodynamics are, you can't win, the best you can do is break even.
Mm-hmm.
Second law is, you can only break even at absolute zero. And the third law is, you can't reach absolute zero.
Okay.
Okay, that was the joking three laws of thermodynamics in advanced physical chemistry. But yeah, entropy is if you take a battery, you've got two chemicals in a battery. It's the reaction of one chemical reacting with the other. Now it's doing it through a membrane and an exchange of electrons through a wire.
Mm-hmm.
But as the reaction occurs, the electricity flows. When both sides of the battery are at the same energy state, reaction has been complete, the battery no longer has any power in it.
Oh, I see. So in other words, a battery actually is working as any other system would to make a balance.
Yes. And the problem which makes, the reason I have to use a battery is a nice closed system. And it allows you to understand what's going on fairly easily. When mm-hmm. you throw this out into the universe, that system is so big that we're drawing energy from everywhere until everything runs down.
Uh-huh.
But we're just going to throw the words out in this book and expect us all to be, you know, chemistry PhDs or master's degree chemists to understand what all these words mean.
Yeah, and that's
going to throw out.
And that's exactly where it lost me. There was some things in here being dealt with that weren't explained to the point where I could understand what it means. And
and they weren't explained to you, but to me, they were being misused.
Okay. Well, and I see that now that we've had this discussion, that definitely, yeah.
But it's coming at it from two different points of view. You're a music teacher, and I'm a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
So where is everybody else coming with this book? I mean, they've got to be, you know.
Well, apparently there's people that do understand it, because they say they love this book. And it did. It got a 4 point something on Goodreads. I don't remember what it was, but it was up there.
Yeah.
So, there was just nothing about this in under things, our caption things, that really impressed me at all. There was a little box in engineering that had a button on it, and that was the entropy drive, and only this spider could activate it. And
it was the inversion drive, and inversion drive is what caused it to break into the non-entropy universe.
Well, you know, every time,
confusing, I know,
every time they engaged this inversion drive, something went wrong, and then the next time it went wronger. And it even went even more wrong. And then it was ultimately wrong, because the Enterprise was almost lost because of it. But
the universe was almost lost because of it.
Yeah, this spider alien understood the off-the-wall physics, and made-up physics is exactly, I think, the way it was described in the book. Improvised physics straightened everything else, or straightened everything out eventually.
Which is surprising that Spock wasn't working on the calculations with them.
Yeah. It smacks of Deus Ex Machina to me that, you know, okay, well, we're just going to make up the physics as we go here to fix the problem. And you get to the end of the book, and it's like, I have gotten nothing from this.
You know, there's another word for that they use in another type of literature. Magic!
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't care for fantasy in my science fiction.
Well, the thing is, in most fantasy novels, the magic that they use within the novel has to be more consistent than the science used in a science fiction novel.
Yeah.
And the author has to stick to it. I don't think we're seeing that here.
No.
What do I need to do for the story? Boom. Okay, we did it.
Change the laws of physics.
You know.
That's a cue thing. All right. So let's see. What do we got? We've got adventures here. Is there anything in there we want to talk about that we haven't already?
I think we've pretty much covered most of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like I said, somehow this spider alien finds a way to close the breach, has to stay inside, and then they go home.
Yeah.
But I don't know how she did it.
Yeah. It's a mystery.
Did she take out a needle and thread and sew it back up?
No. She pushed the button. On the little box engineering.
Button's on the Enterprise. She's on the other side.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh. Okay, so
Who knows? Maybe they teleported the button over to her.
Yeah. How did the Klingons know
Or teleported her finger.
How did the Klingons know where to find the Enterprise?
Yeah, how did they know which direction they were going in?
I don't know.
How did they even know the Enterprise was going out of the galaxy?
Yeah. Now, this, you know,
nobody's ever done that before.
Yeah, and this
nobody's is... Nobody's been able to get through the barrier.
And I believe that was in Chapter 3. The beginning of the book, the entire beginning of the book deals with Kirk unable to sleep and being very irritated and aggravated, waiting for an answer whether his ship was going to get to test this thing. And that was very un-Kirk-like.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's just there to be an opening to it. I think if she'd have skipped that, she'd have had more room to talk about things that needed to get discussed. You know, the literally could have begun. The book could have been begun in Starbase 20, whatever it was.
Yeah. So, and then...
Anyhow, Starbase... There it is, Starbase 18.
Yeah.
Could have begun there and gone on. You didn't need that first... couple of chapters.
And you know, you'd think by this time Kirk would figure out not to let him put new stuff on the Enterprise, especially after the M5 disaster.
No, I don't think he ever got that memo.
Yeah, hey, come on, you got this untested technology, install it on my ship. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
Scotty can do it. Scotty can do anything.
Yes. So, and
what do you mean it's not in a tech manual?
Yeah. Your next question is, how did the Klingons lose when they went up against the Enterprise? I think we figured that out. It is the...
We talked that out, yeah.
The magical piloting skills of Mr. Sulu, okay? Why were the dream states induced?
Yeah. A good question that is not answered.
Yeah.
What caused them?
What caused them was needing to fill up 250 pages.
Ah! But that's not in Kirk's control.
No. So, what caused...
Might be in Herb Tanzer's control, but not Kirk.
Yeah. These are questions that you're putting forth as concepts that need to be answered. What caused the breach between the universes, and how exactly was it fixed? We've already come to that conclusion.
Right.
We are getting kind of a fantasy-like book instead of a science fiction or a Star Trek novel. Why
more of those elements.
Yeah. And then the very first thing that you started with is the next one. Why was the Prime Directive brought up when... Or...
Why wasn't it brought up?
Why wasn't the Prime Directive brought up when dealing with this creature, the one that was created... and given entropy.
Brand new sentient creature. Its whole life ahead of it. Its whole evolution ahead of it. And they're messing with it.
Yeah. And well, it didn't exist. They brought it into existence.
Is that the loophole in the Prime Directive?
I guess it must be. Because apparently they, you know, it just got run over.
Yeah. And I like to talk about the themes of this novel.
Mm-hmm.
Technology run amok. Oh, Dennis, over here. There's some lovely muck over here.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't a whole lot of logic.
No surprise for any of you listeners that know where that line is from.
I know where it's from. I know where it's from. A movie I know very well. All right. Well, favorite points of plot?
None.
Yep. I gathered by your science. I gathered by your silence. That's where that was going. And me either. I just couldn't find anything in this book to grasp onto.
Oh, darn it! I blew it. There is a favorite part. Point of plot.
What, the period of...
Anytime I needed to go to sleep, I knew how to do it.
Oh, there you go. So you didn't need the pills to go to sleep. You just opened this book.
No, I didn't need any sleeping pills.
All right, let's go into our closing thoughts and find out what we're going to do next time.
Something better.
Yes. So,
something much better.
Yeah, but your closing thoughts on this particular book.
This is not a Klingon-centric book. We need a Klingon-centric book. Next month, we're going to get a Klingon-centric book.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we?
Yes. And I would have to agree, it is definitely a flop as a Klingon book is concerned. However, there are a lot of people out there that say that this is a very, very good Star Trek book. And they've enjoyed it numerous times. So, you know, we're not...
We are not one of them.
We may be panning it, but that doesn't mean that you may not enjoy it. So, you know, give it a look if you want to. next month, we will be looking at Agents of Influence by Dayton Ward. And I have read this before, and I already know it's a good book.
Yeah. And I've gone 25 pages in and not fallen asleep.
Yeah, it's a story of Klingon agents, Federation agents on Klingon soil. It's a good book. Dayton writes very well, as we all know, and I'll be looking forward to reading this for a second time because it's been a long time since the last time I read it, and I don't remember much of it. So, hey, you know how to find us. If you're listening to us, you can get us on CAG.org. You can get us on Google Podcasts, I guess. You can get us on Apple Podcasts. You all know this already because you're listening to it. So spread the word. Please tell your friends, your neighbors,
like,
your enemies, your...
Like nicely warmed up peanut butter.
Yes. Just pass, get the word out, and let's get more listeners and all those kind of things. We've got some neat things coming up in the future for CAG podcasting. So, I guess with that, I'll say that I am Jajim.
And I am Jorn, still awake after all these pages.
Wow, yes. And join us next time on Bound by Honor. Kapla! You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kirk Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!